Chapter 4. Richa checked into a downtown hotel called the Metropole Palace, 2 blocks east of First Street, about level with the main shopping strip. He paid cash up front for one night only and used the name Jimmy Reese. He had cycled through all the presidents and vice presidents long ago, and was now using second baseman from the Yankees' non-championship years. Jimmy Reese had played pretty well during part of 1930, and pretty badly during part of 1931. He had come from nowhere and moved on to St. Louis for part of 1932. Then he had quit. He had died in California, age 92. But now he was back, with a single room and a bath in the Metropole Palace, for one night only, due to check out the next morning before 11 o'clock. The Metropole was a sad, half-empty, faded old place, but it had once been grand. Richie could see that. He could picture the corn traders 100 years ago walking up the hill from the river wharf and staying the night. He guessed the lobby had once looked like a western saloon, but now it was thinly made over with modernist touches. There was a refurbished elevator. The rooms had swipe cards instead of keys. But he guessed the building hadn't really changed very much. His room was certainly old-fashioned and gloomy. The mattress felt like a part of the original inventory. He lay down on it and put his hands behind his head, thought back more than 14 years to Kuwait City. All cities have colors, and KC was white. White stucco, white painted concrete, white marble. Skies burned white by the sun, men in white robes. The parking garage James Barr had used was white, and the apartment building opposite was white. Because of the glare, the 4 dead guys had all been wearing aviator shades. All 4 men had been hit in the head, but none of the shades had broken. They had just fallen off. All 4 bullets had been recovered, and they broke the case. They were match-grade 168-grain jacketed boat tails. Not hollow points, because of the Geneva Convention. They were an American sniper's bullets, either Army or Marines. If Barr had used a battle rifle or a submachine gun or a sidearm, Reacher would have gotten nowhere, because every firearm in theater, except the sniper rifles, used standard NATO rounds, which would have cast the net way too wide, because just about all of NATO was in-country. But Barr's whole purpose had been to use his own specialist weapon, just for once, this time, for real. And in so doing, his 4 13-cent bullets had nailed him. But it had been a tough, tough case, maybe Reacher's finest ever. He had used logic, deduction, paperwork, footwork, intuition, and, ultimately, elimination. At the end of the trail was James Barr, a man who had finally seen the pink mist and was strangely at peace with his capture. He had confessed. The confession was voluntary, fast and complete. Reacher never laid a hand on him. Barr talked quite freely about the experience. Then he asked questions about the investigation, like he was fascinated by the process. Clearly, he had not expected to be caught. Not in 1 million years. He was simultaneously aggrieved and admiring. He had even acted a little sympathetic when the political snafu eventually broke him loose, like he was sorry that Reacher's fine efforts had come to nothing. 14 years later, he had not confessed. There was another difference between this time and the last time, too, but Reacher couldn't pin it down. Something to do with how hot Kuwait City had been. Grigor Linsky used his cell phone and called the Zek. The Zek was the man he worked for. It wasn't just Zek, it was the Zek. It was a question of respect. The Zek was 80 years old, but he still broke arms if he smelled disrespect. He was like an old bull. He still had his strength and his attitude. He was 80 years old because of his strength and his attitude. Without them, he would have died at age 20. Or later, at 30, which was about when he went insane and his real name finally slipped his mind.
"The lawyer went back to her office," Linsky said. "Reacher turned east off First Street. I laid back and didn't follow him, but he turned away from the bus depot. Therefore, we can assume he's staying in town. My guess is he checked into the Metropole Palace. There's nothing else in that direction."
The Zek made no reply.
"Should we do anything?"
"How long is he here for?"
That depends. Clearly, he's on a mission of mercy. The Zek said nothing.
Should we do anything?
Linsky asked again. There was a pause, cellular static, and an old man breathing.
We should maybe distract him, or discourage him. I'm told he was a soldier, therefore he will probably maintain a predictable pattern of behavior. If he's at the Metropole, he won't stay in tonight. Not there. No fun for a soldier. He'll go out somewhere, probably alone. So there could be an incident. Use your imagination. Make it a big scenario. Don't use our own people. And make it look natural.
Damage?
Broken bones, at least. Maybe he gets a head injury. Maybe he winds up in the coma ward along with his buddy James Barr.
What about the lawyer?
Leave her alone. For now. We'll open that can of worms later, if we need to.
Helen Roden spent an hour at her desk. She took three calls. The first was from Franklin. He was bailing out.
I'm sorry, but you're going to lose,
the investigator said.
And I've got a business to run. I can't put in unbilled hours on this anymore.
Nobody likes hopeless cases, Helen said diplomatically. She was going to need him again in the future. No point in holding his feet to the fire.
Not pro bono hopeless cases.
If I get a budget, will you come back on board?
Sure. Just call me.
Then they hung up, all proprieties observed, their relationship preserved. The next call came 10 minutes later. It was from her father, who sounded full of concern.
You shouldn't have taken this case, you know.
It wasn't like I was spoiled for choice.
Losing might be winning, if you know what I mean.
Winning might be winning, too.
No, winning will be losing. You need to understand that.
Did you ever set out to lose a case? Her father said nothing. Then he went fishing.
Did Jack Reacher find you?
He asked, meaning, should I be worried? He found me, she said, keeping her voice light.
Was he interesting?
Meaning, should I be very worried? He's certainly given me something to think about.
Well, should we discuss it?
Meaning, please, tell me. I'm sure we will soon, when the time is right. They small-talked for a minute more and arranged to meet for dinner. He tried again, please, tell me. She didn't. Then they hung up. Helen smiled. She hadn't lied, hadn't even really bluffed, but she felt she had participated. The law was a game, and like any game, it had a psychological component. The third call was from Rosemary Barr at the hospital.
James is waking up. He coughed up his breathing tube. He's coming out of the coma.
Is he talking?
The doctors say he might be tomorrow.
Will he remember anything?
The doctors say it's possible.
An hour later, Reacher left the Metropole. He stayed east of First Street and headed north toward the off-brand stores he had seen near the courthouse. He wanted clothes, something local. Maybe not a set of bib overalls, but certainly something more generic than his Miami gear, because he figured he might head to Seattle next for the coffee. And he couldn't walk around Seattle in a bright yellow shirt. He found a store and bought a pair of pants that the label called taupe and he called olive drab. He found a flannel shirt almost the same color, plus underwear, and he invested in a pair of socks. He changed in the cubicle and threw his old stuff away in the store's own trash bin. $40 for what he hoped would be 4 days' wear. Extravagant, but it was worth $10 a day to him not to carry a bag. He came out and walked west toward the afternoon sun. The shirt was too thick for the weather, but he could regulate it by rolling up the sleeves and opening a second button. It was okay. It would be fine for Seattle. He came out into the plaza and saw that the fountain had been restarted. It was refilling the pool, very slowly. The mud on the bottom was an inch deep and moving in slow swirls. Some people were standing and watching it. Others were walking. But nobody was using the short route past the memorial tributes where Barr's victims had died. Maybe nobody would ever again. Instead,
Everyone was looping the long way around, past the NDC sign, instinctively, respectfully, fearfully. Reacher wasn't sure. He picked his way among the flowers and sat on the low wall, with the sound of the fountain behind him and the parking garage in front of him. One shoulder was warmed by the sun and the other was cool in the shade. He could feel the leftover sand under his feet. He looked to his left and watched the DMV building's door. Looked to his right and watched the cars on the raised highway. They tracked through the curve, high up in the air, one after the other, single file in a single lane. There weren't many of them. Traffic up there was light, even though First Street itself was already building up to the afternoon rush hour. Then he looked to his left again and saw Helen Roden sitting down beside him. She was out of breath.
I was wrong. You are a hard man to find.
But you triumphed, nonetheless.
Only because I saw you from my window. I ran all the way down, hoping you wouldn't wander off. That was a half hour after calling all the hotels in town and being told you aren't registered anywhere.
What hotels don't know won't hurt them.
James Barr is waking up. He might be talking tomorrow.
Or he might not.
You know much about head injuries?
Only the ones I cause.
I want you to do something for me.
Like what?
You can help me with something important.
Can I?
And you can help yourself.
He said nothing.
I want you to be my evidence analyst.
You got Franklin for that. She shook her head.
Franklin's too close to his old PD buddies. He won't be critical enough. He won't want to tear into them.
And I will. I want Barr to go down, remember?
Exactly. That's exactly why you should do it. You want to confirm that they've got an unbreakable case. Then you can leave town and be happy.
Would I tell you if I found a hole?
I'd see it in your eyes. And I'd know from what you did next. If you go, it's a strong case. If you stay around, it's weak.
Franklin quit, didn't he?
She paused, and then she nodded. This case is a loser. Always around. I'm doing it pro bono, because nobody else will. But Franklin's got a business to run.
So he won't do it for free, but I will.
You need to do it. I think you're already planning to do it. That's why you went to see my father first. He's confident, for sure. You saw that. But you still want a peek at the data. You were a thorough investigator. You said so yourself. You're a perfectionist. You want to be able to leave town knowing everything is buttoned down tight according to your own standards.
Reacher said nothing.
This gets you a real good look. It's their constitutional obligation. They have to show us everything. The defense gets a full discovery process.
Reacher said nothing.
You've got no choice. They're not going to show you anything otherwise. They don't show stuff to strangers off the street.
A real good look? Leave town and be happy? No choice, he thought. Okay.
She pointed. Walk four blocks west and one block south. The PD is right there. I'll go upstairs and call Emerson.
We're doing this now?
James Barr is waking up. I need this stuff out of the way early. I'm going to be spending most of tomorrow trying to find a psychiatrist who will work for free. A medical plea is still our best bet.
Reacher walked four blocks west and one block south. It took him under the raised highway and brought him to a corner. The PD had the whole block. Their building occupied most of it, and there was an L-shaped parking lot on the rest of it for their vehicles. There were black and whites slotted in at angles and unmarked detective cars and a crime scene van and a SWAT truck. The building itself was made of glazed tan brick. It had a flat roof with big HVAC ducts all over it. There were bars on all the windows, razor wire here and there around the perimeter. He went inside and got directions and found Emerson waiting for him behind his desk. Reacher recognized him from his TV spot on Saturday morning. Same guy, pale, quiet, competent, not big, not small. In person, he looked like he had been a cop since birth, since the moment of conception, maybe. It was in his pores, in his DNA. He was wearing gray flannel pants and a white short-sleeve shirt, open neck, no tie. There was a tweed jacket on the back of his chair. His face and his body were a little shapeless, like he had been molded by
constant pressures.
Welcome to Indiana. Reacher said nothing.
I mean it.
Really? We love it when old friends of the accused show up to tear our work to shreds.
I'm here for his lawyer, not as a friend. Emerson nodded.
I'll give you the background myself. Then my crime scene guy will walk you through the particulars. You can see absolutely anything you want. And you can ask absolutely anything you want.
Reacher smiled. He had been a cop of sorts himself for 13 long years on a tough beat, and he knew the language and all its dialects. He knew the tone, and he understood the nuances. And the way Emerson spoke told him things. It told him that despite the initial hostility, this was a guy secretly happy to meet with a critic, because he knew for sure he had a solid gold slam dunk case.